Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Desperate House Witches. I am Dorian Wallace. And unfortunately, I am not joined by my lovely sister, Raina, tonight because she is feeling under the weather and actually cannot talk tonight. Poor thing is sounding like she swallowed a whole pond full of frogs. So send her some good vibes and hopefully she will be on the mend soon. My co-host for the evening will be here shortly because he is also our guest for the evening, Mr. Taliesin Govanen. And hopefully I won't make it too awkward in between because you know how I get when I'm talking solo. I am accompanied by some absinthe at the moment. So if you have read the blog, you had seen that I went on a zoo trip today with a bunch of second graders. It was interesting. But before I get into that, I just want to give a shout out to my cousin Jeff. If you're listening, I'm going to send you, even if you're not listening, I'm going to send you a knuckle sandwich and a bag of chips. Love you, Jeff. So, second graders, very fun. I got to say, this is actually one of the better behaved field trips that I've been on. I was in charge of three children. One of them was my own, so that was good. So two others that very well behaved children, so we didn't have too many problems. Bus ride got down there to Riverbank Zoo in South Carolina. Got a little bit loud, but it was okay. The teacher kind of cut them off and put them in their place, and on the way back we had a movie, so they were kind of chill. So I'm grateful for that. Shout out to their class. I don't know kind of really what to talk about because Taliesin is our politico, and he kind of steers. You know, I shoot out questions to him, and he kind of goes with it. So hopefully I won't be too lost tonight. I didn't bring my cards up because they were in my purse, and when I got home, it was hit the floor running after I got off the bus. So, like I said, a little bit disorganized tonight. And if the audio cuts out, I apologize in advance. Because I got a little forewarning when I first signed into the studio here that they were having auditory problems, but cleared my cache and my browser, and hopefully all will be working well and smoothly. So, hope you guys are all doing good. Hope Mercury retrograde is not kicking your butts too much. I haven't had too bad of a time, which is lovely because usually it's kind of punching me about the head and I just want to hide under the covers until it's over. So yeah, yay for me at least, for a smooth Mercury retrograde. Tell you guys a little bit about last weekend and why we weren't there or why we weren't on air. I, as some of you know, or may know, that I am an author. I haven't put out a book in quite a few years. I was switching genres and got really bad case of writer's block, and I'm still trying to work my way out of it to produce new material. I'm actually going to be doing a few shorts in the horror and paranormal and fantasy genres. that do not include erotica this time. You know, they may include some sex scenes, but it's not going to be as in-depth as my former books, which I will be tidying up and re-releasing soon. So if you check out parismoon.weebly.com. And yeah, I know, it seems cheesy doing a, you know, plug-and-play website, but, you know, do what you got to do. But yeah, so I'll be putting those up in Cobalt Raven's Magical Notions pretty soon. But yeah, it was very nice to be able to see everybody that I haven't seen since 2010. So it's been a while. So it was really nice to catch up with people outside of Facebook for a change. You know, there are some that I see on a fairly regular basis because we're all kind of in Charlotte. But even some of the ones in Charlotte, I don't see that often. So it was very nice. I was doing some readings and I had PDF copies of the books. You know, I don't know, the cons are kind of slow if you've not experienced them as a seller or a vendor. Excuse me, I burped. If you've not had experience with that, then, you know, it has a tendency to go slow. So if you ever do one, don't be surprised and don't be too disappointed. Don't take it personally. The sales have a tendency to go up after the cons, after people have met you, because generally they have a few big guests that are there for the weekend. Like this weekend was Doug Jones, who I didn't get to see. I didn't get to go up and meet him, which I wish I had, but I was standing at the table talking to my husband and my son. Because they had just arrived and he walked by with his handler. And I don't like that word either because it sounds like he's a puppy. But he was walking past with his handler. And I was like, I looked at him, my eyes got real wide, and I was excitedly waved like, hi. And he did the same. He mimicked me. So it kind of made my day. So I didn't get to meet him, but I got to wave to him. So yeah, they have lots of nice stuff and everything. But when they have big guests like that, generally people, if you haven't saved up for this event, which, you know, there's so many cons that people have to pick and choose sometimes, but, you know, the funding can go low. So, you know, sales go more after the con, you know, so you got to make sure that you have your cards out there and people are picking them up and talking to people, saying hi, introducing yourself. So yeah, that's a bit of convention advice should you find yourself in one. And nowadays it's very easy. Well, not very easy, but it's easier to put out your own books and materials. I do highly suggest finding good editors, because there are very good editors out there, some who work for publishing houses and, you know, some who don't, who do it freelance, but they're very good, but they do it for very inexpensively. So, but yeah, don't haggle with an editor, you know. Shop around, find the good, you know, best, just ask advice from friends, authors that you admire, that you like their work, you know. Don't be afraid to approach people. You know, sometimes they can't answer you, but, you know, most authors are willing to interact with their fan base or, you know, other people starting out. But, yeah, I didn't mean for this become a lecture on writing. I'm just trying to find something to talk about. So I'm not floundering like I usually do. Anyway, so what else is going on in the world? Yeah, I heard Sarah Palin opened her mouth again. What about this time? I really kind of don't care, and I'm wondering why people even give her credence by acknowledging that she's speaking. You know, I personally, it's like, whatever. You know, she's never going to win another position in office. We know what she is. You know, I think Donald Trump at this point would have a better chance of winning a seat in the Senate or something, you know, than she ever will. Because she seems to have a really bad case of foot and mouth disease. It's just ridiculous. But yeah, no, I kind of got outed on the bus. I didn't tell you all about this. I didn't even tell my sister about this. Because I haven't had a chance to talk to her again. But as we were riding up to settle the children down, the teacher's mother had accompanied us. Very nice woman. And I love my son's teacher. I'm going to be sad to, you know, have him moving on, but I'm sure, you know, his next teacher will be good too. But she had turned around and started relaying a story to the children, you know, and it was a good story, but I had to say something to the teacher because it was all about God and Jesus, you know, that, you know, a person being faithful and God and Jesus, and that's a good person. And I kind of looked over at the teacher. I said, we're not Christians. And it didn't dawn on her. And, you know, down here in the South, a lot of times it doesn't really dawn on people, you know, because, yeah, a majority of the people down here in North Carolina are of the Christian persuasion. So they feel more freely, you know, or they are able to talk about it more freely. But yeah, as more and more people speak up, it's like, I wouldn't have said anything had she not gotten so in depth about church and God and all that. So she said, "Your spiritual being," which I was fine with. But yeah, we went throughout the day and I was fine with that. And a very nice woman sat and talked to her and we were chatting all day. And then, you know, conversation came up, and yeah, you know, I'm one of the few people that I don't have to hide in the broom closet, and even if I did, I'm stubborn and I refuse to, because I'm like, it doesn't matter if you like me or not. I don't care. I'm gonna be who I am. So yeah, I let her know that I was a witch. And, of course, her face went pale and like, oh, okay. You know, she's like, but, okay, well, I've been talking to you all day and you seem like very good people. And you were good with the kids and everything. And, you know, so we came to a mutual understanding. But it was kind of interesting. And, yeah, it's also interesting having this kind of conversation with myself. I feel like I'm not overstepping on my sister like I usually do. So I have a tendency, I'm on delay, so I have a tendency to interrupt her, and I feel bad about that. And it gets worse the more people we get. So I am actually wondering where Mr. Taliesin is. I'm going to write him a message here real quick. Anyway, so yeah, you know, I tell you what, if you're listening, you feel like calling in, you want to talk, go ahead, call in, because I am flying solo right now. You can call me Han. Let's see what else is going on. Apparently, this last strawberry moon, you know, I had seen everything, you know, a bunch of stuff posted about it. And I wasn't sure what that meant. Apparently it was in Sagittarius. I read today, because it happened last Friday, I believe, or last Monday, I'm not sure. It was over the weekend. It was over this past weekend or this past week. And apparently it was supposed to be bad. So if you started getting into arguments with people or having even more of a hard time because it coincided with Mercury retrograde, I guess fear not, because a lot of people have this issue. So yeah, I don't know what that was about, but you know, hey, if you know any details about it, you know, please message us. I would like to know, because apparently it was a big deal. Let's see what else. I won't sing to you, I promise. My sister will kill me. I left you for one day, and there you are singing to everybody, chasing all our friends away. I won't do that, I promise. Because I have a tendency when I get nervous and when I'm at a loss for things to say, I start humming or singing or do-to-do-to-do. Anyway, so yeah, I'm going to wait a few more minutes and see if he comes on. Oh, okay, there he is. I see him. Okay. Let's see if he's in the studio. I know, I'm like sitting here talking. Like to the computer. I apologize. Like I said, I'm not good solo. I'm better when I can bounce off my sister and she can talk me down when I say stupid stuff. Or, you know, give a differing opinion. Or, yeah. See, I can't even talk. But, I don't know. It's been an interesting week. It's been a good week, though. You know, I geared myself up today for it to be a tough day, and it was going to be so exhausting. And yes, I am tired because we drove an hour and a half down there, and we drove an hour and a half back. But thankfully, this time it wasn't on a school bus. It was a charter bus. I was very grateful for that. That was awesome. We even had a bathroom on the bus. So I guess if you go a certain distance, they have to provide a vehicle with a bathroom. Plus, I don't think North Carolina buses can go into South Carolina. So I don't know. But I was grateful nonetheless. And I was grateful to see all the animals. We got a real, like, close-up look. And I'll be posting pictures later. I'll post them on the Desperate House Witches as well. You know, just for shits and giggles. Just so you guys can see. He is in the queue. Let me see. I do not see you, baby. So I'm going to stay on the phone. I'm going to reboot this real quick because I might be having difficulties with it. I'm going to sign back in. Hopefully y'all can still hear me. And there he is. Okay.
Hello.
Hello.
I was listening to you talking. I'm like, can't you see I'm in the queue? I like hung up and like called back in twice.
Oh, honey. Oh, I'm so sorry. No. Okay. I've been getting, our engineers are working on a solution for the audio file issue. In the meantime, a quick fix is to delete your browser cookies and clear the browser cache. So, yeah, you didn't show up. I am so sorry.
That's okay. I was just like, and here I was trying to get the Messenger to open up on my tablet, and the Messenger on my tablet likes to work occasionally. And more of that Mercury retrograde
shit,
huh?
So how are you? Huh?
I'm doing good. I'm gearing up. I've been coming up with a format for my Pagan Pundit podcast. I'm going to be hopefully posting the first one here within the next week. So
awesome.
I've got a whole list of topics and interesting titles for things, and hopefully I'll be providing information and entertainment to all of us far left progressive liberals out there very soon.
Awesome. Cannot wait to hear it.
It's going to be
so
fun.
Excited.
I'm thinking the subject for my first one may be titled How the Republican Party Became the North American White People's Party. That may be one of the early subjects.
That would be perfect. Speaking of which, can you give us like a little clue as to how that happened?
Well, I've talked about it before, about things like the Southern Strategy trying to win over white Southern racists who used to be Democrats but got pissed off when the Democratic Party embraced civil rights, and how the Republicans brought them in, and how they, and through that racist wing of the party, how they're the worst positioned party in history for dealing with the demographic changes that are coming with the growing Latino voting population. I mean, just to give you an idea of how disastrous it is for a party to be doing as poorly as the Republicans are with the Latino vote, that every year 600,000 Latino teenagers turn 18 and thus become eligible to vote, which means that between 2012 and the upcoming election next year in 2016, there will be 2.4 million new Latino voters, potential Latino voters, who could not vote last time for Barack Obama but will be able to vote for the Democratic candidate this next time. And with Latinos going almost 3-1 in favor of Democrats, and with having, on average, a higher population of their young people voting than other ethnic groups like white teens and that sort of thing, that it's just the way that they're poorly positioning themselves in terms of the immigration reform, the racist rhetoric coming out of the party, is just literally disastrous. Where literally you're going to see by 2020 Texas being a purple state that could easily swing to the Democrats when it's time for whoever wins next year to go for their second term. So it's just massive. And the entire Republican electoral strategy since the 1970s has been based on a power base in the South, where the twin pillars of that were Florida and Texas. Well, they've already lost Florida. Florida went for the Democrats the last two elections in a row. And if they start having to actually spend money and time to keep Texas, it's all over. I mean, there's no way that they could ever win, being a regional Southern party and only being able to count on like Louisiana and Alabama in future elections.
Yeah. And maybe Mississippi. But I think
that's the thing
point.
Too is that what?
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. I'm on delay. I think even at this point, Mississippi is swinging to the Democratic side, though, isn't it? Even as backwards
as they
are.
I mean, there's definite noises along that way, and principally because of the fact that all of the demographics are changing. And so all of these, many of these states are going to become what are known as majority-minority states. In other words, when you take all of the non-white population and add it up, then it adds up to be more than the white population in these states. And with the fact that Republicans – I mean, last time, to show you how badly Republicans do with African-American voters, there was a poll that showed 98% of black voters were going to vote for Barack Obama in a poll that had a 3% margin of error, which means that, there's a possibility that there were black babies that were in the womb that hadn't even been born yet that already hated Mitt Romney. So that's just how badly it is there, and the fact that the Latino and the Asian American vote are going along similar trajectories, and how quickly it's happened. I mean, in 2000, George W. Bush got 40% of the Latino vote, and the fact is that by 2008, the Republicans were getting clobbered, where it was 2-1 voting for Democrats over Republicans amongst Latinos, and by 2012, it was 3-1, and the trends are only continuing.
Wow. Yeah, I'm to the point where can you really call them minorities at this point?
Right. The fact of the matter is that in a state like Texas, white people are still the single largest group, but if you add up black people, Asian Americans, Latinos, together, they are the majority of the state, but they're still, if you look at each group individually, white people still outnumber any one of them, but just not combined.
Okay. Because, I mean, thank you for explaining that, because I'm like, you know, I live in a very diverse community. I live in Charlotte, North Carolina. Now, if you step outside of Charlotte, North Carolina, there are barely any minorities, you know. So it's like here in Charlotte, you know, you've got everybody. You know, you've got we've actually got quite a few Egyptians, which surprises me. We've got Ethiopians, we've got Vietnamese. If you drive down Central Avenue, you have your pick of, you know, like Mother's Day. I wanted Indian food, and they happened to be closed, so we drove down Central, and we found a place that we thought was crepes, but it was actually, I don't know how you pronounce it, but it looks like crepes, but it's like crepes or something, but it's Bosnian food. You know, I was like, oh my God, I'm eating Bosnian food. I had never eaten it before. It was wonderful.
I would say in Northeast Ohio, you can actually find Lithuanian restaurants. So you get that more in urban areas where, you know, when a lot of people emigrate to the U.S., they tend to go to urban areas because there's more jobs there. I mean, you take a look at Ohio, and literally you will have Cleveland, a major metropolitan area, very Democratic. You have Toledo, a major metropolitan area, very Democratic. Along the lake in between Cleveland and Toledo, it might as well be West Virginia. And you get that a lot. I mean, Akron, very a metropolitan area, very Democratic. Even Cincinnati is becoming increasingly Democratic. And yet these huge swaths of the state, the unfortunate areas that give us people like John Boehner, are still very much like West Virginia. That's why Ohio is considered such a purple state, because of the wide demographics.
Yeah, my ex-husband actually lives up there near, I think he moved to Columbus at this point, but he used to live in a small town called Thornville up there. It was interesting visiting, you know, having just moved from California to North Carolina. You know, it was nice. It was kind of like what you see on TV as small, middle, you know, class American, you know, small town America, you know, Main Street type of stuff. It was very tiny. And then it's like I started talking to some of these people, and it's like, oh my God, you're all like racist. What the hell is wrong with this town? You know, I don't want to move here. No, thank you.
Oh, the town that my wife and I bought a house in a couple of years ago here in Ohio, Barberton. Around here, people call it Barbertucky. And my wife just thought it was a weird, goofy name. She didn't realize how many rednecks lived in this town. I mean, there is literally, in the center of town, is what I call the redneck ghetto. And let me tell you, I'd much rather walk alone at night through the low-income housing that has a lot of black people than I would walk through the redneck ghetto. Because these are houses where you see several Confederate flags used as drapery in the front rooms, and you know that in the redneck ghetto, almost all those houses are fucking armed. So I definitely, those are streets that I don't walk down here in this town. But I live on a very nice suburban end, and it's by and large, except for the redneck ghetto, most of this town is very blue collar, very Democratic, and it's kind of interesting. I changed congressional districts when I moved, and you know, if I want to be active in local politics and I really want to defeat somebody, I've got to go outside of my town because I've got Tim Ryan in my area who is just a really rock solid blue collar Democrat representing me in Congress. So it's kind of a sea change because I moved from a very Republican town to a very blue collar Democratic town.
Yay.
Yes. Yes. And of course, politics, that's what I'm here for. And that's what everybody's talking about. Things have changed a great deal since the last time I talked to you in terms of who's running and who's in and what things are looking like.
It's like, I swear to God, you know, every single time somebody comes out saying they're running for the GOP, I'm like, that clown song keeps going through my head. Yep, that, da, 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 da.
Yeah.
Another one popped out. You know?
Right. And meanwhile, Rachel Maddow was recently saying that the Democratic side, you could fit all of them into a Ford Fiesta to drive them around. And
yeah.
You could even have room for a campaign staffer to drive them around as long as somebody didn't mind sitting in the middle and back. So.
Yeah. I know. How many do we have now?
On the Republican side, we now have 10 official candidates. We've got another, because Rick Perry just got in today, and, you know, Rick Perry just broke a big glass ceiling in politics, because never before have we had somebody run for a major party's presidential nomination while under criminal indictment. But that is Rick Perry. He is under indictment in Texas under corruption charges, and he just got in today for the Republicans. Yay, Rick Perry.
Oh, God.
Okay.
Sorry.
But now, and of course, in the coming days, Jeb Bush has finally announced when he's actually going to make it official and announce his run for presidency, and that's going to be on June 15th. And of course, Scott Walker is still making all the noises like he's going to run. Donald Trump has said that he's going to make an important announcement, but he's not going to say what it is. But coincidentally, the day after he makes that announcement, he has a big trip planned for New Hampshire. So I guess we can kind of predict where that's going to go there. There's still people who are saying that looking like they're going to get in, like John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, which is going to be interesting because I think John Kasich is the kind of guy who could go unnoticed at his own campaign rally. He doesn't exactly have a big profile going on here. Which is just as fine because the guy's a weasel. Take it from me, I live in his state. Then you've also got people who are making noises like they're going to get in, like Bobby Jindal. I knew that once 30 Rock went off the air that the intern guy was going to have to get another job, but I didn't think he was going to run for president. But and of course, you know, so basically, you know, the interesting thing, though, is that what the choices that Democrats have and the choices that Republicans have, it's really beginning to look again a lot like 2008, where it was such a different story. I mean, in 2008, it came down for the Democrats between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. And it was a very tough fought primary. And the thing is that Democrats had an embarrassment of riches. We had a situation on the Democratic side that no matter who won between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, we are going to have a fantastic fucking candidate that we could get behind and enthusiastically campaign for all the way into the White House. Whereas in 2008, the Republicans had the situation of, which one of these guys who's running do I hate the least? I mean, which one is the least batshit crazy? And that's the situation that we're having again, where the two main, I mean, yeah, okay. So Lincoln Chafee, former Republican, is announced for the Democratic nomination, and Martin O'Malley has announced for the Democratic nomination. But these guys are really not players. Not players in the slightest. That we have two major candidates for the Democrats. We've got Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. Again, two people, great legislators, great candidates, great ideas. We get to pick who we like most. Spoiler alert, it's going to be Hillary. But still, we get to pick who we like most, and the Republicans are left with who is the least batshit crazy, who is the least likely to wet themselves on the debate stage when they go into the presidential debates, and that's who they get to pick to run. So just the differences are just so night and day.
You know, I got to say, and I know you're going to cringe when I say this, because I don't like the man. I loathe him. But I have to say, Rand Paul, as bad as he is, at least he's fucking consistent. He is the only one on the GOP running ticket, whatever, that is consistent every time he talks. Now, regardless of that fact, he is still an asshole who talks over people and will not listen to reason. He clearly does not like being spoken to by women. That is clearly.
Oh, no, no. And also, Grandpa also has this bad tendency to employ neo-Confederates in his campaign. That's something that keeps cropping up again and again and again. And yet, Rand Paul, though, is also somebody, though, who is, he is flip-flopping on things. The way that he's flip-flopping is
early on
he tried to establish a base amongst the more libertarian wing of his party. And yet when you talk to real libertarians and you point out, yeah, Rand Paul likes to consider himself libertarian-leaning, and yet he's against women's reproductive rights, and he's against gay marriage and all that, and most of your real libertarians would go, yeah, what the fuck up is up with that? So the guy really is a Republican. He's just trying to have some libertarian window dressing to differentiate himself from the other pathetic losers amongst his party. I'll say probably the most consistent person in the entire Republican field is Ted Cruz. He's just dependably batshit crazy. But he is very, very consistent.
Sorry.
You know, and the thing is, too, is that the thing I wanted to really bring up tonight, though, I know that there's a lot of people listening who are Bernie Sanders fans, and I am a Bernie Sanders fan, too. I've liked Bernie Sanders for a long time. I love the fact that the guy is not only willing to stand up for his convictions, but he is also very, very willing to put out there good, solid, progressive, liberal ideas and present them as being good ideas, not just, well, it's the best alternative we have to the Republicans. No, he's willing to go out there and say, "This, we need to do this because it's right, because it's the right thing to do for the country."
Yeah.
He's always been very, very consistent with that, and I've always loved Bernie. The thing, though, now that Bernie has gotten in to the Democratic race, the thing is, I want to remind Bernie fans, is that we have an opportunity, and this is where the title of this, my particular focus on this month's show comes from. We have, with Bernie Sanders, we have the opportunity to run such a different kind of campaign for the Democratic nomination that we really have the opportunity to begin the sea change of American politics. And no matter how much people like Bernie, they need to resist the temptation to go negative against other candidates, especially Hillary. Because let's face it, I mean, the U.S. electoral politics, especially when it comes to the president, has been in the cesspool for a long time. I mean, it really got dragged down into the bottoms of the pits back in 1988 when Lee Atwater was running George H.W. Bush, Poppy Bush's presidential campaign, and he put out the infamous Willie Horton ad, which was basically still, to this day, the most racist political ad ever aired in the history of United States elections, where they had a picture of a big, scary black guy and said that, Michael Dukakis let this guy out on a furlough and he raped and murdered a white woman, and they had this vision of this revolving door of convicts going in and out of jail and they were all black. It was just such ridiculous race baiting. And since then, and since, you know, that was part of a successful campaign, there's been a lot of people who've been emulating that really, really bad example for quite a long time. And it's gotten to the point where in electoral politics, especially in primaries, it's come down to, instead of candidates saying, here's my ideas, if you like these ideas, vote for me, instead it's become an ego game where it's like, I'm a great guy. And not only am I a great guy, that other guy's evil. Don't vote for him, vote for me. And then somebody else says, no, that guy's evil. No, that guy's evil, that guy's evil, that guy. And it gets to the point, no wonder people feel like politics has become a battle of the lesser of two evils, because that's what people are talking about. They're evil. No, they're evil. No, you know, vote for me. I'm a great guy. Here's my family. See, here's my kids. I proved my dick works. Vote for me. But it's still, they're evil, they're evil, they're evil. And the thing is that, you know, no wonder people get turned off the political process when it's like, you know, when everybody's going around saying the other person's evil and not really giving people a reason to vote for them, but trying to get them to vote against the other guy. And you see this all over in Republican politics all the time. They become masters of the mudslinging evil game. Who's more evil than thou? Of course, nowadays, a lot of them are just running on, hey, vote for me. Why settle for the lesser evil? But still, it's, you know, it's really become a cesspool. And the thing is that the thing I love about Bernie Sanders, is the fact that he has said, I've never run a negative campaign in my life, and I am not going to start now. And I watched an interview with Bernie on CNN where the CNN people were trying to get him to trash Hillary Clinton, and he wouldn't. He kept cycling back and saying that, you know, we need these policies to counter the Republican policies that have been such a disaster for this country. He keeps the focus on the Republicans. He's not willing to go negative with Hillary. Even when he does contrast himself with Hillary, it's in terms of the ideas. He's not saying she's a bad person. He's saying that I've got an idea that's different from hers on this. And that's important because here in this, you know, Bernie has said he's not going to go negative. And Hillary is very happy about this. And in fact, the thing when you hear Hillary Clinton talk about Bernie Sanders, the things that she says most often are, I agree with Bernie. When it comes to things like income inequality, she agrees with Bernie. When it comes to campaign finance reform, she agrees with Bernie to the point where she is willing to back his constitutional amendments to undo the Citizens United ruling and to try to take elections off the auction block to billionaires. So she's willing to agree with them all, you know, right on down the line. And so if we can have a race on the Democratic side where it's not a competition of egos, but it's one person saying, here's my ideas, and another person says, well, here's my ideas, and whoever's ideas you like better, you vote for them. With that kind of thing, we can transform politics, begin the transformation from being a argument over the lesser of two evils and turn it into the greater of two or more ideas. And, I mean, Bernie's already said that if Hillary Clinton gets the nomination, he's going to endorse her. He's already said that at the beginning of his campaign. Because for him, the important thing is, you know, stopping someone like Ted Cruz from getting into the White House. And doing it on the back of solidly good progressive liberal ideas and not the pissing contest.
Yeah, definitely. You know, so do you think that this is going to be the turning point that, you know, people are kind of sick of the whole backbiting and the mudslinging and the name calling? You know, is this how we are going to change the face of politics to come?
This is how we start, because the thing is that a lot of people say, I don't like negative campaigning. I don't like negative campaigning. And yet people respond to negative campaigning. That's why people keep doing it, because it works. Yeah. But the thing is that if we have a field, especially, and the thing I'm not happy right now with Martin O'Malley getting in is that, you know, he's been CNN's attack monkey. When they're like, oh, you want to trash Hillary Clinton? He's like, oh, boy, you're talking to me. You like me. I'll trash her all you want. And what I want is if we have a very high-minded dialogue between Bernie and Hillary, and I'm hoping that by the, in and of itself is going to force people like Martin O'Malley and Lincoln Chafee to also elevate their own rhetoric, to avoid the politics of demonization, and instead have it be a competition of the better ideas. And I think that if we can have a major party's primary feature a true competition of ideas instead of the lesser of two evils, then people in this country, especially those people who consider themselves independent because they don't feel like they're part of either party, they need to look at that and say, you know what? Wow, we like that. We like that way more. We want more of that. If we can inspire people to the point of wanting that, to where they're actually going to directly punish candidates who go negative and go really sleazily negative, that's how we can start turning it back. And the best way to do that is to lead by example. So I don't care if you're a Hillary fan or a Bernie fan or whatnot. Keep it about the ideas that each candidate has. Keep it about the ideals and the values as progressive liberals that we want to run on. Keep it like that, and we can show the rest of the country this is possible. We can do this. It is, you know, it is not inconceivable that we can do things like this and make people want it to the point where they're not going to buy anything else.
I agree with you. I mean, because personally, I'm so sick of the campaign ads. I mean, they start like a year ahead of time at this point. They keep starting earlier and earlier. I'm surprised, personally, that there haven't been any campaign ads as of yet. You know, not from the Democratic side, because they have a tendency to wait. You know, but
yeah,
from the Republicans, yeah, I'm surprised. And, you know, things like jumping on the bandwagon with, you know, they're, I don't know, and this is just my perspective. I'm not as well-versed as you, but my perspective is, you know, they jump on anything that has anything to do with Christianity. Like, you know, this whole Duggar situation with the molestation of his sisters, which
right,
I can understand. You know, kids are kids, and clearly you cannot supervise more than, you know, five kids at
right,
a time. You know, it's hard for even two people to do that, you know, and to have that many kids. I mean, she's just, speaking of clown cars, you know, popping
yeah,
them
it's
out.
A vagina, not a clown car woman. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, something like that was probably bound to happen. But the whole fact of the matter is, you know, all the Republicans backing them up. It's like,
yeah,
no, this is a hypocritical thing. Do you not understand why we're all upset about it?
But
they
also, this again also shows, it also shows, though, one thing that kind of surprised me was that there is a Republican candidate who publicly rebuked the Duggars. And it was somebody that a lot of people think would be the least likely, and that was Rick Don't Google My Name Santorum came out and said that, no, you know, he publicly rebuked Mike Huckabee for backing them up, saying, no, this is not partisan politics. This is something that is bad. And out of all the Republican field for, you know, Mr. Frothy himself, Rick Santorum, to be the one to come out and say that, really does show that the guy does have more political smarts than people tend to give him credit for. He's blinded by his own ideology, but he does have a bit more, you know, he seems to be more genuine in his morality than a lot of these other guys, even if a lot of the stances he takes because of that morality are quite noxious. He was able to see, no, this is not good. You do not just go and say, oh, well, kids will be kids, especially since it wasn't just the fact that he had this bad tendency, Josh Duggar had this bad tendency to, you know, feel up his sisters while they slept. It's the fact that the family didn't do anything about it. They didn't get him into counseling.
Yeah.
They certainly didn't get any counseling for their daughters who had it happen to them. They shipped him off to a friend for a summer to go and work in a home improvement construction business, figuring, oh, that'll sweat it out of them. But they really didn't do anything about it. As a matter of fact, the closest thing they did about it was to have a friend of theirs who was a state highway patrolman give him a stern talking to. Of course, that state highway patrolman is currently doing time in jail on kiddie porn charges. So we see what kind of a great judge of character they had in their mentors.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. You know, I mean, this is yet another reason why we haven't had cable in like 7 or 8 years because of bullshit television like that, you know, making stupid people famous. I'm not paying for that. Fuck that.
Well, look, I haven't had cable in a while, although I do miss being able to DVR the Rachel Maddow show. I've actually found this nice little pirate YouTube channel where they post whole episodes. So I still get to watch my Rachel.
Yay. I love her.
But when you tell, and let me tell you, people ask me, Rita, where do you get some of this stuff? I'll tell you where I get it. I get a lot of stuff from watching Rachel Maddow. She just has great stuff. And I go back and rewatch stuff from 2 or 3 years ago, clips from her from 2 or 3 years ago, and it reminds me of stuff. And I've gotten so many great ideas on stuff to talk about on my own podcast by watching watching old clips of the Rachel Maddow show, because a lot of the stuff that's going on now in politics has been going on, especially on the Republican side, for a very long time. And I've seen this stuff coming, and she certainly saw it coming. So there's just there's a YouTuber named Lysindia the Ace, and she posts clips from the Rachel Maddow show the day after they air. So it's always like the nice, big, juicy 15, 20-minute segments at the beginning of the show that she winds up posting. So I also keep up on things that way. But and you were talking about the Christian thing on the Republican side. And this right here is, again, where the Republicans were victims of their own success, because a lot of people forget that at one point in American politics, even evangelical Christians were not political animals. For a long time in this country, evangelical Christians did not get involved in politics. They felt like it was dirty and that it wasn't godly to be involved in politics. And that started changing when Supreme Court decisions started going against them. A lot of people think it was Roe versus Wade that convinced the political right to get more involved in politics. It was actually started earlier than that. The first Supreme Court case that really rankled them was Griswold versus Connecticut, which legalized birth control nationwide. That was really where the anti-choice forced birth movement started, was in opposition to Griswold versus Connecticut. It was only Roe versus Wade that kind of cemented the ones who were wobbly on whether or not they should get involved in politics. And in fact, they were brought into the Republican Party by Ronald Reagan's people, because back in the 1980, when they were gearing up for the 1980 campaign, a lot of Reagan's people were really worried that George H.W. Bush, Poppy Bush, was going to be able to take all of the Northeastern liberal Republicans, and there used to be such a thing as a liberal Republican, and be able to use that to get the nomination. So Reagan's people courted the social conservatives and the religious nutjobs and extremists as a way of shoring up their conservative base. And so they were really brought in during the 1980 campaign. And these are very patient people. They started working within the party at very low, low-level jobs, knowing that if they gave themselves a few decades, they'd be able to rise up and really take control of things. And now that the Republican Party has lost so many of their old-style middle-class moderates, and now that they've lost so many college-educated moderates, in many ways, the religious extremist base is such an inordinately large part of their primary base that Republican candidates are stuck. They have to wind up embracing things that are going to absolutely be poisonous to them during a general election campaign, and yet if they don't, it's very, very difficult to get the nomination. So in many ways, they're victims of their own success. Yes, they got these religious right people in there, and when you combine them with the white Southern racists and that sort of thing, and the homophobes and all these other various groups, it gave them a very reliable base that would come out and march out and vote for them in every election. But as the country changes and as the demographics change, it's really boxing them into the point where they really have nowhere to go.
Yeah, and that base is shrinking year by year, month by month, actually. You know. You okay?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just
I'm
choking a bit on my pain medicine, if you'll excuse me.
I'm sorry. Oh.
Well,
I gotcha.
It's an herbal pain medicine, so it's not a bad thing.
Yes.
But
there you go. Yeah, and that's another thing. They need to fucking legalize that shit. I'm telling you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and that's another thing is that
across the country.
Hillary has already come out and said that, you know, she's going to continue Barack Obama's campaign of not interfering with states that want to legalize marijuana. So that's a big thing. And that's another thing that people aren't talking about in this campaign. A lot of people who are talking about anti-Hillary this, anti-Hillary that, they're still talking about the Hillary that they know from the late 90s and during the early 2000s, when she was still trying to run a little too much and trying to operate a little too much as your 90s Democrat. And like I said before, in the 90s, the Democrats got this horrendous idea that the way to beat Republicans was to become more like them, to blur the lines between Democrats and Republicans and try to win on charisma. And we saw that completely and utterly fail in the 90s for everybody whose name wasn't William Jefferson Clinton. And it continued to not work during the 2000s. And, in fact, we wound up getting a decent president back when you had somebody who was willing to run to the left of the 90s Republicans in the name of Barack Obama. But the thing is that Hillary, I think, has always been far more liberal than those earlier political calculations really led on. I mean, don't forget, this was a woman who, when she was in college, was fighting passionately for women's reproductive rights, for she worked for the ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment. And also don't forget, too, that early on in the Clinton presidency, Hillary Clinton was the person who tried to bring single-payer health care to the United States. What people call Hillary Care was actually, I mean, you know, she was tasked by her husband, the first President Clinton, to look at the health care system and try to come up with real, actual reforms that are really actually going to help everybody, the people and the country in the long run. And she came back with a plan for single-payer health care, where everybody in the country would have a national health card, and if you got sick or were injured anywhere in the country, you could go into any doctor's office, any hospital, present that card, and you were going to get care. Single-payer health care. And it didn't pass, partially because those were still the old Democratic Party in there, people who, if you told them to get in the firing squad, would get in a circle. And it didn't happen, but she campaigned for single-payer health care over 20 years ago. And I think now that not only has the lessons of try to be more like a Republican, you win, and you'll win, shown to be just completely and utterly wrong, but the incredible rebirth of the progressive left in this country, I think, has freed Hillary. And she's not only running to the left of what she did in 2008, she's running to the left of Barack Obama these days. She's running to the left on President Obama on immigration. She is running to the left on campaign finance reform. Again, she said that we need to overturn Citizens United, even if that means using a constitutional amendment to do so. And she singled out Bernie Sanders' constitutional amendment that he's introduced in Congress as a way that we could do this. She's moving to the left on a lot of things. And again, this is part of the opportunity for Bernie fans. The more we talk about Bernie's ideas, and not only is that they're good ideas, but they're popular ideas, the more likely we are to see Hillary embrace them even more. The more likely we are to see the Democratic Party as a whole embrace them even more. And if we start getting Democrats running as Democrats with a clear and decisive choice between progressive policies and regressive conservative policies, we're going to see victories. We're going to see victories for Democrats even in off-year elections, because nothing turns off the base better than giving them something to vote for, something that they feel passionately about. I mean, let me tell you, a lot of people in the Beltway press were completely confused when Terry McAuliffe was running for governor of Virginia. Because he was not only running in an off-year election, he was running in an off-year election. Virginia has their governor's races in odd-numbered years. 2009 and then 2013 was the most recent one. The next one's going, you know, the next one is, the next one's going to happen in 2017. So these aren't only off-year elections when normally the conventional wisdom says that Democratic-based turnout is very bad. This was off-year. There weren't even any senators or members of the U.S. House of Representatives up for re-election. This was just statewide office. And a lot of the Beltway press and conventional wisdom would say, well, if you're a Democrat running in a southern state like Virginia in an off-year election, then you better run conservative. You better try to hug that line between Democrats and Republicans as tight as you can. Terry McAuliffe didn't. He ran an unabashedly liberal campaign. He ran on women's reproductive rights. He ran on embracing Obamacare. He ran on immigration reform. He ran on unabashedly progressive ideals. And not only did he win, he won because the Democratic base in Virginia turned out. Just as many African-American voters turned out to vote in 2013 for Terry McAuliffe, that turned out just as many as who turned out in 2012 to vote for Barack Obama. So if we give the Democratic base something to vote for and candidates to be enthusiastic about, they will turn out. And when they turn out, we win. So that is why we need to promote Bernie's ideas. We need to push Bernie's ideas because Hillary Clinton is very, very smart. Her heart is already more liberal than she's shown before, and I think that if she just sees that these ideas are not only good ideas but popular ideas, we're going to see even more. We could see a Democratic platform that looks way more like Bernie Sanders and not even like the one they ran on in 2008 with Barack Obama.
I got to be honest with you. I love Hillary. I do. I personally would prefer Bernie. Can't have Bernie as president, I hope she picks him as vice. I really, really am praying to all the gods that somehow he gets into that office, whether it's vice president or whether it's president. Because, honestly, they should combine and just run together. You know, I would love that. I would absolutely love that. And I think that's probably what would be best for this country.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, though, Hillary is more than likely going to be the nominee. And I don't think you're going to see any serious consideration on the part of people like Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders to go for vice president simply because they're very valuable in the Senate. And we kind of need their leadership there. Let me also give the reason. I like Bernie Sanders, too. I really do. But I really think that Bernie Sanders' support in the Democratic Party, I think his support is going to max out somewhere around 20-30%. And there's a couple of reasons why. One is that I think, for one thing, the Democratic Party is very comfortable with Hillary Clinton. Over 60% of Democrats are just fine with her being the nominee. And to convince people to change from somebody that they already feel like they know and they already feel that they like in favor of somebody else, it takes a lot. And it would take really a major unforced error on Hillary Clinton's part, I think, to make people think that they needed to do that kind of a radical sea change, even this early on in the process. And I don't think that Hillary Clinton is going to make any unforced errors like that. And also, though, another thing, too, is that, again, going back to 2008, we had a great choice between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. And a lot of people who were just fine with Hillary Clinton 8 years ago are still just fine with her now. For a lot of people, Bernie Sanders is an unknown quantity. And, again, I think the best way to get him to be better known for people is to talk about his ideas, because that can also serve the dual purpose of promoting those ideas in the party as a whole. I just don't think that that's going to be a huge sea change. And also another important thing that a lot of Bernie Sanders fans aren't owning up to, and that is that Bernie has a little bit of a perspective problem. He's the senator from Vermont. And Vermont is not exactly an extremely diverse place. It's got a lot of liberal people, but it's got a lot of white liberal people. And most of Bernie Sanders' support is coming from college-educated white people. And there's nothing bad with that. I mean, I'd rather have a college-educated white person making a decision over one of those, you know, regressive yahoos who think Liberty University is a real college. But the thing is that the Democratic Party, the Democratic base, the Democratic base, one of the big ways is that it's so different from the Republican base is the fact that the Democratic Party and the Democratic base looks a lot more like what America looks like these days. In other words, it's a lot more diverse racially, ethnically, and all of that kind of stuff. And the big misstep that I think that, you know, and I don't know if it was a misstep. I don't know if it was just, you know, I think Bernie's running on the ideas that he wants to run on. These are the things that are really important to him. These are the things that he wants to be seen, talked about more in the Democratic Party as a whole. I don't think there was a lot of calculating going on when he came up with what he was running on. These are all ideas that he has held as being very important for a very, very long time. But they're pretty much all economic ideas. They're pretty much all ideas having to do with the economy and income distribution and tax policy and that sort of thing. And there's nothing wrong with any of that. But Hillary, very, very early on, without anybody telling her that she needed to, completely of her own accord, I think locked up two very important constituencies in the Democratic base. She after the Baltimore police riots. Let's call them what they were. They were police riots. These weren't spontaneous riots by poor people. These were riots that were instigated by out-of-control cops. But after the Baltimore police riots, Hillary came out very strongly talking about how we need to address the problem of police violence in this country, and she fully embraced the Black Lives Matter movement, which is absolutely vital for anybody going for the Democratic nomination. And then when she gave a speech on immigration, she not only embraced what Barack Obama has done thus far, she went to the left of Barack Obama on immigration, which, again, has made the Latino community just absolutely enthusiastic about Hillary. Now, it's not that Bernie isn't on the right side of these issues. Every time he's voted very consistently pro-civil rights, pro-immigration reform. I mean, his positions, his personal morals are in the right place on this. But by not talking about these issues early, and now it's to the point where enough people are kind of saying, hey, you know, have you forgotten some very important constituencies here? Now if he starts taking positions on it, it's going to look a little bit more opportunistic, which is, again, why I think he's not going to do it. He's just going to keep on message the way he's been. But, you know, yeah, I mean, a lot of my white liberal friends will say things like, well, you know, of course, you know, repairing the economy and fixing the minimum wage and all that is going to help a lot of, you know, parts of the minority community too. And it's true, it would. But you and I both know, we both know that Black parents, that they could do very well economically. They could get a great house in the suburbs. They could have a brand new car or a recent model car in the driveway. They could have really nice SAC college funds set aside for their kids. And that could be all great economic prosperity for African-American families. Fantastic. But they know, and we know, that if their kids get pulled over by a white racist cop, and let's face it, if their kids are driving a newer car, they're more likely to get pulled over because white racist cops are going to assume that a Black kid in a BMW, they probably stole it. And then if their kids get pulled over in that nice car by that white racist cop, that their kids have a much greater chance of being beaten or being murdered by an out-of-control racist cop, no matter what their economic standings are, no matter what neighborhood they live in, no matter what college that they're going to go to, that happens. You could talk economic prosperity all you want, but, you know, the best economic prosperity in the world isn't going to make their kids any safer. And so that is why any Democratic candidate who is really serious about wanting to take this nomination has to address these issues and others.
Well, I've been witness to it in front of my own house, you know, because I live in a very diverse community. Yeah, my neighborhood, you know, we've got a lot of African Americans. We've got a lot of Hispanic, you know, and Latinos. You know, we've got quite a few white people in our neighborhood, but I back when I was still smoking, you know, like analog cigarettes, because I'm still on the e-cigarette, but back when I was still smoking cigarettes, I was like, I was getting ready to go out, and I saw one of the neighborhood kids, you know, he was a teenager, and I think he was walking up to the school or something, but he was walking past my house, and I saw a cop stop him. Now, this kid, I see him every day. You know, I haven't seen him in probably a year, I'm assuming, because he graduated. But I didn't know this kid personally, but I knew of him, and I knew he wasn't a troublemaker. We have very few troublemakers in this community. And I went out to the cop. I was like, what the hell are you doing? Why are you stopping him? You know, I know him. You know, and just the feeling of having to vouch for him because I was white made me sick to my stomach.
Yeah.
You know, because this cop he was just walking through the neighborhood. He was walking up to the school. And it's like, seriously, you're stopping this kid for what? He did nothing. He did nothing.
Yeah.
I know this kid. He's a good kid. Leave him alone. You know, but
yeah.
I was like, you know, hey, how you doing? And talking to him, and I was talking to the cop. I was like, you know, hey, what's the problem? And, oh, well, we got a report of a break-in, and I'm like, Yeah, well, he just lives up the street, and he just walked past the house. So I said, I know this kid. I highly doubt he had anything to do with it. You
right.
know, and I looked at the cop like, leave him the fuck alone. You know, but the fact that that still has to happen
right.
makes me angry.
Exactly.
It really does.
Right. And, you know, so that's why, you know, talking about like all these economic policies of Bernie Sanders benefit everybody, it's not enough. Or immigration reform is
yeah.
another thing. I mean, because Republicans have been using illegal immigration as a racist dog whistle. But it's, of course, it's not a dog whistle to the people who you're talking about, but which
yeah.
is why the Republicans have lost Latino voters, especially young Latino voters, for a generation. But they've been using immigration
yeah.
as a club to beat up the entire Latino community in this country for years. So talking about the need for immigration reform is another thing that, again, it's an important sign to the Latino community of like, hey, we want to take this club away from these assholes. We want to fix the broken immigration system in this country, but also real immigration reform can stop a lot of the efforts that are being done in states like Arizona to relegate all their Latino citizens to second-class citizen status. I mean, let's not forget that during the 2012 campaign, Mitt Romney called the Arizona Papers, Please law a model that we should follow in the entire nation for dealing with illegal immigration. I mean, that's literally a law that said that if somebody looks like they could be vaguely Mexican, that a cop could stop them and demand to see proof that they are an American citizen, even if they were a fifth-generation American, where their parents and their grandparents and their great-grandparents had all been born in this country, just because of the way they looked, the fact that they looked Latino, meant that they could be stopped for no
yeah.
reason and harassed by the cops. And this guy, I mean, this guy is the guy who wrote that law, is a muckety-muck in Sam Baerbach's government in Kansas. And I call Sam Brownback Sam Baerbach because it's like getting fucked in the ass with no Vaseline dealing with this guy's economic policies. And, you know, and this is still a mover and a shaker. These are still the people who are writing immigration policy for the Republican Party. Are people who thought that this Papers, Please law was a great idea. So, again, if you really want to get the Democratic nomination, you have to appeal to Latino voters, and you have to pledge that we're going to take this club away from these out-of-control racist assholes.
Well, I'll give you an example. My mother is an immigrant, or an immigrant from Scotland.
Yeah.
And the laws in place, I mean, she almost got deported when we tried to take my grandfather's ashes back to Scotland because of the fact that, you know, when she got married, somebody had stole her purse on their honeymoon and she lost her green card.
Right.
And she was like, okay, well, I'm married to an American citizen, you know, didn't think anything of it for, you know, 20, 30 years. Well, 20
right.
something years. At that point, because I was 20. So it was about 21 years. She hadn't thought about it. And when she went to get her passport, I mean, it was months and months of bullshit. So their excuse of, well, if they would come in legally, is a load of fucking crap. It's based on racism. They have stacked the cards against these people coming into this country trying to make a better life for their family, you know,
right.
and the way the rules are set up, it doesn't matter what color you are, but it's based off of a certain race, and that's just deplorable.
And a lot of the immigration policy that we still have in this country is a holdover of the Cold War. I mean, that's where most
yeah.
of the immigration quotas and policies and all that came from the Cold War, which is, again, why even having two people on the Republican side running for president with Latino-sounding names, as in Cruz and Rubio, isn't helping the Republicans with Latino vote, because both Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio are of Cuban descent. And Cubans, for a
yeah.
long time, got a sweet deal, even from the most racist of Republicans, because they were fleeing a communist country in Cuba. And so any Cuban that could get their big toe across the border into the U.S. was given asylum pretty much right away, whereas people who had been working for years to try to emigrate legally from other countries like Mexico and Guatemala and Nicaragua and that sort of thing, they were just getting a big shitstorm. So running Latino politicians who are Cubans do not help the Republicans with the Latino community, because they're either viewed as turncoats or just people who had a much easier ride. And so they're not really that well liked by the larger Latino community that often, especially since, I mean, really, Marco Rubio running for president, I just believe that he's going for it now because he's giving up his Senate seat to run for president. And the guy is so green, and he's making so many rookie mistakes. The one piece of significant legislation that had his name on it was the bipartisan immigration reform deal that they got through the Senate when the Democrats are still controlling it. That, of course, died a slow death in the House because the House wouldn't vote on it. And they wouldn't vote on it because they knew if they voted on it, it would pass. But then after he got battered by the right wing so much, accusing him of trying to give amnesty to illegals and all that stuff, he walked away from his own bill. And these days he will tell you that he shouldn't have worked to pass that bill. The only significant piece of legislation with his fingerprints on it, and he feels the need to repudiate it. I mean, that just shows you how green the guy is, because let's face it, a senior politician is going to say, okay, if I back this bill, I'm going to get a lot of flack, but it's just something you got to do. And he didn't do that. He turned and ran, much in the same way that Mitt Romney ran away from his singular achievement as governor of Massachusetts in Romney Care. And when you're forced to walk away from your best, biggest legislative achievements in order to run in the Republican Party as it is today, it completely hamstrings you. And I think Marco Rubio is pandering so much to the hardcore right-wing elements that I think he's moving from just a poor candidate to one of the people who I call would be a disaster candidate for the Republicans if they got the nomination, because they would just get absolutely fucking buried, just absolutely damn buried.
Speaking of Senate and Congress, I did want to ask you a question. As far as I've heard, and I've thought this for years, but the fact that there is no term limit, there's a term limit on the president, but there's no term limit on the Senate and the Congress. Do you foresee whatsoever in our lifetime that changing?
I really don't see that changing. The only reason that it changed for the presidency was because, I mean, for pretty much the whole of American history, you had presidents that willingly left after two terms. That was the precedent set by George Washington, and they willingly left after a couple of terms. The only reason that it changed for the presidency is you had a Democrat named FDR who didn't just kind of retire after two terms. He got elected four times, and that caused a lot of the Republicans to decide to finally back term limits for president where they didn't want to before, and it was a very special situation. I really don't think it would have to happen because of a constitutional amendment, and to move a constitutional amendment like that through the Congress, it's not going to happen, because a lot of the people who really control the levers of power in the Congress do so because they've been there a long time. I mean, there are exceptions. The fact that Elizabeth Warren is like the rock star of the Democratic Party right now, even though she's a relative newcomer to the Senate, is more because of the power of the overall progressive movement and not because of any personal gravitas on her part. I mean, she's in many ways the head of a movement that's just gaining incredible momentum. But most of the people in Congress who are there, who control the strings of power that could allow something like that to get through, they have the strings because they've been there a long time. And really, you're not going to find either party supporting this, to tell you the truth. Because, for every person who stayed in their way too long and it was an embarrassment, like Jesse Helms or somebody like that, then you have, folks like Bernie Sanders, folks like Marcy Kaptur, a member of the House of Representatives from the Democratic Party in Ohio. You have people like Ted Kennedy who are just in there for a very, very, very long time. And, you know, so no party is really going to back that, just because when you get someone good in there, it is kind of nice to be able to keep them in there and to build up the kind of momentum that they have.
Yeah. Hey, okay. I've got, because we're about down to 10 minutes here. But I did have one more question, since actually it's dealing with my state. They are getting ready to, first of all, they just passed a bill. Our House Senate just passed a bill that makes it way more difficult for whistleblowers, which I'm seriously considering a move out of this fucking state. I've had it. But they are also getting ready to vote. Now, McCrory, who I do not support, I have never voted for, and, you know, since he vetoed, even for the fact that he didn't do it really of his own cognizance,
right.
But he vetoed a bill that would allow magistrates to step away from marrying same-sex couples because of their religion, which really
right.
There's only one fucking religion that has a goddamn problem with it, and I don't understand why they're so obsessed with people's sex lives.
Right.
I mean, how much of a chance do these bills, even though Indiana backed down, why do these bills keep trying to get through? Why, you know, how do we stop this?
Well, the thing that's really going to stop them permanently is basically for one of them to actually become law and get challenged in the courts and get ruled as unconstitutional. The thing about South Carolina's law, I know, I don't know what the tally on that was. I heard there was a possible vote to override the governor's veto of that particular law
yeah.
that was supposed to happen today.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened with that.
Actually supposed to happen Wednesday.
What?
It was actually supposed to happen Wednesday. They moved it to Thursday. I don't know what happened today because I was at the zoo all day.
Right. And the thing is that the thing about the South Carolina law is that if one of them was going to become law, it would be a great one to challenge in court because it's so broadly worded that you could actually have somebody decide that they're not going to issue a marriage license to an interracial couple if they feel like it's against their religion. They won't issue a marriage license to people of two different religions if they feel like it's against their religion. It's ridiculously broadly worded. Well, you could log in through the Opera browser. The thing is that really the only way to really kill these things permanently is to have one of them become law and get challenged and ruled unconstitutional. But although the business community is really taking the lead in fighting against these laws because it really does create a hostile business environment. Pick one to
yeah.
pick up on that spot. Because of a hostile business environment and that sort of thing. The thing is that these bills are coming up because of the last gasp of the anti-marriage equality movement. They're realizing that they're going to lose at the Supreme Court. They're trying to find any way they can to try to maintain whatever status quo they have, desperately clinging on to things. And it's really not working. There's no way that any of these laws would be ruled constitutional. Because let's face it, if you can't ban same-sex marriage outright, then you can't do it through the back door either. And also because
yeah.
it brings up the whole specter of a renewed push against interracial marriage and things that we thought were settled long ago. But really what it is because in states where, you know, Republicans have gerrymandered their districts to where they're so ridiculously safe that the decision as to who sits in that seat is made during the Republican primary, and the Republican primary is increasingly ruled by the most extreme right-wing religious fringe of the Republican Party. It's these people saying, okay, you know, for years we supported you guys, and we've been after for stuff, we haven't got it. Now dance, monkey boy, dance, you know, give us this stuff.
Yeah.
And it's really a rear guard. It's like the lost cause during the Civil War. Once everybody knew the South was going to lose and the lost cause. Some people in the Christian right would like to think that they could do a new era of Jim Crow, only instead of against black people, it could be aimed against gay people. It's like, okay, well, you won the big argument, but we're still going to try to enforce this, you know, this sexual orientation segregation through other means. But again, it's not working. We're just way too well connected as a country, and the law is just way too clear. They're going to keep trying. And the biggest thing that can happen is for, you know, the business community really starts putting money against these people, saying, look, you're fucking up our business, and we don't care how many tax breaks you give us. You're screwing things up, and we're going to not give to you anymore. I think that's what will really be the biggest death knell for it, other than just a federal court going, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, which is basically what the magistrates, but what the judges here in North Carolina did as far as when they passed same-sex marriage in October. You know, they were like, that's unconstitutional. You guys are stupid. Fuck it. You guys can get married. You know, it was kind of like bam, bam. You know, there was two judges that voted for it. You know, it's just, I don't know. I guess I just don't understand the argument. I don't understand the obsession with people's sex lives. I don't understand the intrusion. I don't understand why they have to be oppressing somebody to be happy. I don't get that. You know?
Right. And again, it's like the whole idea, it's like so many privileges are coming under attack in the country. White privilege, male privilege, Christian privilege. And again, it's kind of like a freak out because people are finally waking up after living in a right-wing bubble for so long. These people are starting to realize that, oh my God, the rest of the world really is coming crashing in. And this little, you know, this little utopian theocratic fantasy world that we've been living in is really not going to survive. And we're not going to have the power of the state to enforce this anymore. And in many ways, this is stuff that people have seen coming for a long, long time. But, you know, let's face it, evangelical Christians have their own media. They have their own movies. They have their own TV. They have their own radio. It's very easy for them to live in a bubble and not realize how much the rest of the world is crashing in until the tidal wave is at the door.
Yeah. And you know what? Anybody willing to live in a bubble deserves to have that wave crashed in on them.
That's why I try to stay very pragmatic. I try to stay very aware of what's happening even outside of the progressive bubble. Because let me tell you, if you just looked at my friends' Facebook pages, you'd assume that Bernie Sanders was going to win the primary with 90% of the vote. But I know that that's not going to happen because I stay in the reality-based community. So.
Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, I got to say, I have a tendency to, like, focus in, hone on something that, oh, my God, that's the answer. And it's like, yeah, but then there's all this that factors into it. And it's like, no, I reject your reality and I substitute my own, you know.
I just try to keep a wide enough net out to see, because there's a lot of things in reality that even – you know, I have a lot of my friends are liberal doomsayers. They're just convinced that it's all screwed, everything's stacked against us, and we can never win. But in reality, if you really keep an eye out to the big picture, we can win, and we are winning. We just have to admit it and go for it.
Yeah. I agree. And I hate to say this, but we are about down to a minute.
Okay.
Oh,
it's been great talking to
you.
Everybody go to the Pagan Pundit Facebook page, and because there's where I'm going to start posting when I put my podcast up online.
I know. And let me know when you launch it, because we will absolutely be advertising it everywhere. We've got the Twitter page now. We've got Google Plus. We've got Facebook. And I think I need to make an LO, but I don't know if that's going to take off still or not. Like, just waiting.
All right.
So
it was great talking to you, and see you next month, same bat time, same bat channel.
All right. We love you, and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
All right, guys. I am going to sign off for the evening. You guys enjoy your weekend. We will not be back next week because it is my wedding anniversary. So I am going to take the time to snuggle with my husband all night. I love you guys, but you're not invited. Anyway, the next week after that, we will be back with Miss Dorothy Morrison, the mistress of Mojo herself. But keep an eye on the blog. I will post one this week just updating you guys, and I may even post a couple. So I love you guys. Please send blessings to my sister who is not feeling well. And we will see y'all next week. Right blessings.